Hello, and thank you for joining this Netcast series titled Targeting Disease Modification in Psoriasis and Psoriatic Arthritis. I am Dr. Sakshi Khatri, a board-certified rheumatologist and dermatologist practicing at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York City.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Song. I'm a dermatologist and clinical researcher at Southern California Dermatology in Santa Ana and a clinical professor at Harbor UCLA.
Today, we will explore strategies to slow the progression of psoriatic arthritis, offering evidence-based insights to optimize patient outcomes and enhance long-term treatment management. To discuss more, we are joined by Dr. Kostas Botsiglou, Medical Director of Rheumatology Center of Western New York. Welcome.
Great. I'm so excited to be here today with a fellow rheumatologist, and a rheumatologist to talk more about how we collaborate. I think one of the obvious places we can start is the connection or overlap of psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis. So I'm curious what you both think. Where do we see overlap, and what are some similarities or not similarities or dissimilarities?
Well, I think it all comes down to the domain involvement. That's what we've been doing in rheumatology, but various domains. Patients are usually coming to us because of pain. Typically, their skin is usually under control. They've gotten into a dermatologist probably a little bit quicker than they got into a rheumatologist. So I feel like the skin involvement isn't as involved as perhaps what you would see in your clinic. But it really comes down to the enthesitis, perhaps the dactylitis. They may have other comorbidities that may be related to psoriatic disease. And from there, we make an informed treatment decision based on the presentations as well as any other contraindications that might be need to be considered.
I will say that when I was doing my rheum fellowship, we didn't really talk about domains of PSA. So we've really come a long way, because I do like the concept of domains of PSA, because when I'm seeing a psoriasis patient in my clinic, I'm automatically thinking or looking for what are the different domains and trying to figure out whether he or she has active PSA. In the absence of a biomarker or a blood test, it's really at the end of the day a clinical diagnosis, right, Kostas? What do you feel about
Well,
that?
absolutely. I mean, my mentors told us that psoriatic arthritis is RA with a rash, which has some truth. But as you mentioned, there's the lack of biomarkers, so they're traditionally still negative. A little different presentation, more asymmetric, maybe smaller joints involved. So, and many times they'll come to us with a history of psoriasis. The psoriasis may have been, as a documented earlier in their childhood or perhaps early adulthood, and now they're coming to us with, frank tenosynovitis, morning stiffness, axial involvement, which is again another domain we weren't really, looking for in the PSA population, which is again gained, I think is getting more recognized. But yes, definitely a clinical diagnosis.
That's an interesting point that you make, that the skin is kind of clearer, so it's really other domains that are active. So in your practice, with just like a pure PSA patient or a psoriatic arthritis patient, you do not tend to see that much of skin involvement. So it kind of skews less skin, more joints or extra articular manifestations.
Absolutely. Many times I'm, looking in the harder spots inside the ear, behind their, in their scalp, make sure they take their shoes off, and for my, my partners to make sure they examine, from head to toe, not just head and toe, because many times it could be just hiding in the nails. And many times they've been told they had eczema all these years that got better, in the summertime. So, getting a family history is also very important as well. Any other comorbid autoimmune diseases such as Crohn's and ulcerative colitis may also influence our decision making as well.
Well, I certainly respect and work closely with all you rheumatologists because of our psoriatic patients. Psoriatic arthritis is one of the most important comorbidities that I'm always screening for. And I really believe that even as a dermatologist, I cannot decide on my therapy until I know or screen for psoriatic arthritis. So in my personal practice, because I am not a board certified rheumatologist, I love to use the PEST questionnaire to screen my patients for disease. And In my practice, when I'm also thinking about systemic therapy, and my patient does kind of fulfill the criteria for PEST, I'm thinking early psoriatic arthritis, a little different from the patients that you guys see who come to you with a chief complaint of significant joint pain. Do you kind of, I'm curious, is that kind of, do you think that's like the difference in the type of patients that you might see versus in a dermatology clinic?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the PEST questionnaire because it's a great screening tool that I encourage my local dermatologist to take advantage of. Because again, we're not expecting a dermatologist to do a tender and swollen joint count, do X-rays and so forth. But a screening tool like the PEST questionnaire really then again it influences the treatment paradigm, right? We might skip altogether the topicals and go right on to a systemic therapy. So, again, biomarkers too would be very helpful if we could have them in this patient population. So,
Jenny, you actually made a very interesting comment that, the PS-PSA population that perhaps a dermatologist sees is so different from a PS-PSA population that a rheumatologist sees. And then it's sort of like extreme ends of the spectrum. Because like in the room office, these are patients who probably don't have a robust skin involvement. It's really the articular and the extra articular non-cutaneous manifestation. So they're probably coming in with maybe more than five swollen joints or five tender joints. Whereas in the derm office, it's sort of that, I mean, I hate to use early PSA, pre-PSA, because I think it's either PSA or it's not. But it's probably that patient with who maybe has one or two swollen joints or tender joints, or maybe enthesitis and dactylitis without a swollen joint or a tender joint. So I think that's a really important sort of distinction to make. And I do agree that our derm colleagues should do the PEST questionnaire. And I mean, I love it that you're thinking of the different domains of PSA when you're seeing patients with psoriasis.
and especially the patients in the derm clinics may not report joint pain, morning stiffness, enthesitis. They would expect that that is not in your scope, real unbeknownst to them that all those symptoms can be classified under one disease, can be explained by one disease process. So,
Right. I truly believe in an integrative approach. And that word can be used in many different ways, but treating the patient as a whole, where our psoriatic patients truly have inflammation and many comorbidities. So I want to not only make their skin clear, but hopefully get them a little bit healthier. And this is one of the domains that I think is really important. And Sakshi, you read my mind. So I was really curious if you believed in the term early PSA, because there's some literature in the rheumatology. In rheumatology that coins the term early PSA. And for me as a dermatologist, for me, if the PEST questionnaire qualifies it, I put early PSA in my notes because they're not having dactylitis or I don't see a swollen joint and I'm not a rheumatologist. So it keeps in my mind where if I see my patients not responding to a systemic treatment that I would have thought that they would, that is approved for psoriatic arthritis, then my next step is definitely referring to rheumatology. So perhaps there's something else going on, or there's because there's something else going on.
right. So I just, I mean, I have two opinions or two thoughts on that whole concept of early PSA, pre-PSA, and I'm sure Costas has an opinion as well. And I'm going to segue to him once I've spoken. We talk about the six domains of PSA, which includes skin, nails, axial disease, enthesitis, dactylitis, and peripheral arthritis. If you remove peripheral arthritis, where you see that swollen joint, tender joint, you're still left with four, five other domains. And if you have a patient that, say, in the derm space, comes in with nail psoriasis and has skin, has psoriasis on their skin, and gives a history of dactylitis, is that not PSA? Right. I mean, I would say that is PSA just because they don't have a swollen joint or a tender joint. And then on the other end of that spectrum, I can say, what if they present to a rheumatologist on a good day where they don't have joint swelling or tenderness? And then that gets missed, or just because they are presenting on a good day, because, a PSA, the inflammation in the joint can ebb and flow. So I don't like sort of early PSA, PSA, I kind of joke with my patients that it's kind of like pregnancy. So you're either pregnant or you're not pregnant. So that's what I say. But Costas, interested in seeing, hearing
Yeah,
your thoughts on it.
actually, I totally agree with that because yes, like we said earlier, it's a clinical diagnosis. So, I mean, if you go by the Casper criteria, which is again not diagnostic, you can not have a personal history of psoriasis and yet be called psoriatic arthritis. So, again, it all comes down to history, physical, family history as well, and any other comorbidities which may portend a higher risk. And then looking at the nails and scalp, again, higher risk of developing PSA if they have those tougher to treat areas as well.
Right.
Great.
And this sort of I had this patient. I don't know if I really speak about this patient a lot. So there's this patient that I saw. This was like a pre-pandemic in 2019. Young male in his mid-30s. He came to me from like a derm perspective with just having scalp psoriasis and less than a BSA of 1% of psoriasis anywhere. And I'm asking him, I'm examining his nails, maybe like a few pits here and there, doesn't really endorse any morning stiffness, says that he has an occasional knee pain, but used to be playing Division I football when he was a little younger. So I was like, oh, is this mechanical, inflammatory? And then I asked him about enthesitis and I examined his Achilles tendon and he gives a history of having recurrent enthesitis, having gone to an orthopod multiple occasions. And then I asked him, okay, any history of IBD? The answer was no. I asked him about, uveitis or inflammatory eye disease. He said he had one episode of uveitis in his left eye. So here you have a patient that has scalp, nail psoriasis, Achilles enthesitis, and uveitis. Is that not PSA? I call it PSA, put him on a systemic therapy. He has not once had any joint symptoms since then. Right? I mean, 6 years, 5 years almost. Same systemic agent, never had once a flare of any arthritic symptoms or his inflammatory eye disease or his, Achilles tendonitis. So, I think that diagnosis, if we just depend on that inflammation in the joint, we will miss our PSA patients. That's how I feel.
I totally agree.
But it sounds like the pest questionnaire does include that, right? It does include the Achilles tendon. So I think you would all agree that using the pest questionnaire for a dermatologist is a good place to start because it has a high sensitivity and specificity. Would you both agree?
Yes,
Yes.
as like the only thing. So if a dermatologist, if there's just one thing that a dermatologist is going to do for a psoriasis patient, then let that be the pest questionnaire. So,
We'll
yeah.
run the
Well,
blood work, we'll do the imaging. You just do the questionnaire.
because right, and what I'm trying to get at is you can't make a decision on treatment until we know that there's PSA, right? And so that we can segue into kind of an overview of treatment options for psoriatic arthritis. But before we get to that, is an easy way because it's sometimes not so easy to get into a rheumatologist. And that's why in my personal practice, I like using the pest questionnaire. But let's move on to why don't one of you guys give us an overview of treatments for psoriatic arthritis?
Well, first of all, it's a great time to be a psoriatic or psoriasis patient right now because there's a variety of treatments, mechanisms of actions that are exploding almost every day. So, but we have our traditional non-biologic DMARDs, methotrexate, flutamides, cilsine. Then we can move on to our biologics, which include just talk about in classes, the TNFs, IL-23s, IL-17s. We also have the smaller molecules or targeted synthetic DMARDs. We have the PDE4 inhibitors and the JAK inhibitors. And then, of course, we have the NSAIDs, which is one of the initial treatments, which the patients who have made it into our clinics have definitely failed several NSAIDs. But there's a variety of classes of medications and a variety of options that can also treat other comorbidities or other conditions that may be managed by other providers.
I do agree with Costas that it's a great time to be a patient that has psoriasis and or psoriatic arthritis because we have just so many different MOAs. I just had a question. I do derm rheum and I do a lot of systemics and I love DMARDs because we've sort of learned within rheum fellowship that DMARD is like our first go-to, especially because in rheumatoid arthritis, DMARDs are so prevalent. I don't know, what do you feel about DMARD, like sulfasalazine? Methotrexate has a place within,
Sure, sure.
PSA, but like sulfasalazine, leflunomide, hydroxychloroquine.
So that I try to avoid those first line actually. Those are for my refractory patients who are on a systemic and may have some breakthrough. And I use the argument many times with the insurance companies. Methotrexate is technically not indicated for psoriatic arthritis. Yes, it's approved for psoriasis,
Yes.
and that's one of the tougher medications to start a patient on. But with the newer MOAs and some great access, we're able to put them on these systemic therapies early on and avoid these DMARDs that which are really not as effective.
You know, I'm so glad that you said that because I completely feel similarly. Like I don't use an oral DMARD unless I have a patient on a systemic and, you know, they're having some refractory disease and I have to add something on.
I think we
But yeah.
adopted our RA strategy all these years because we had just the TNFs, and IL-17s, 23s, and so forth. So I think that has anchored a lot of our legacy providers, I like to say. But yeah, I definitely there's no reason to start there early on if you don't have to. So
I think it has been exciting to have all these new systemic treatments. And often we get the psoriasis approval first and then followed shortly by psoriatic arthritis. Often our guidelines aren't even able to keep up to date, right? So I'm curious if either of you have comments. So if you do have a patient who has both psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis, is bio naive or systemic naive, where are you starting? Or it just, there's, because we have so many choices, is it very individualized?
Yes, definitely very individualized. Because if they're coming to me with predominant skin involvement, I'll pick one of the newer agents that have excellent skin control. Where if it's more of a axial involvement or perhaps extra-articular manifestations like uveitis, that'll skew me to use perhaps an older MOA.
Yeah, I loathe when people sort of prescribe as like this blanket statement that, oh, I'm just gonna give this one for all my psoriasis plus minus PSA patients. I mean, you know, the reason why we have different MOAs is for a reason. You know, that's where the whole history taking and comorbidity really comes into play. And I do agree with Costas that, you know, if they have uveitis or axial disease, you know, we have a different MOA versus if they don't have uveitis and axial disease, or even a comorbidity like IBD, you know, you're sort of looking at a different MOA versus not. So it's not a one size fits all. It really comes down to what do they have, and then you pick a systemic agent based on that.
Great. So I want to switch topics a little bit. As you both know, I do a lot of clinical research. And when we look at studies for systemic agents for efficacy for psoriatic arthritis, we commonly see the ACR score as what's being used. I see this movement towards minimal disease activity or MDA. Can you guys tell me more about it? And how do you use it in clinic, or is it more of a clinical trial tool?
Well, first of all, the ACR 20 is indicated or was meant for rheumatoid arthritis. So, not a great metric. Our derm colleagues have PASI 90, PASI 100s, and we're dealing with ACR 20s, although ACR 50 is becoming more and more standard. But MDA is gaining acceptance and recognition, not only by my peers, but by the payers as well. So, it's something that can be easily done in the office. I mean, if you're doing a rapid three, you're almost there anyway. Especially now, it's getting harder and harder to get medications approved if you don't have a way to justify it. So MDA is one of the many tools we have, and I personally am incorporating it in all my patients with celiac disease.
So I like an MDA just because, you know, it also gives importance to skin. And, you know, of course, there's a component of joint, you know, swollen joint tendon.
Can you tell me what MDA means and what the different components are first before you go?
Okay. So MDA is minimal disease activity, and it basically says five out of seven criteria needs to be met to, you know, say that you've met MDA, and that criteria includes arthritic criteria like, you know, your swollen joint count should be less than equal to one, your tender joint count should be less than equal to one, Leeds enthesitis index should be less than equal to one. Then it's looking at skin psoriasis, your BSA should be less than equal to 3%. And then it's looking at, you know, patient's assessment of their disease, patient's assessment of pain, and HAQ-DI, which is like a disability questionnaire. So if they meet five out of that seven criteria, they are an MDA. So the reason why I personally like MDA is that, you know, there is the joint component, There is a skin component, and then there's like a patient's, patient reported
Oh.
outcome. So it's exactly, it's like a mix of all, and it allows the patient also to feel that, you know what, they're a part of that whole, am I doing well process. So it's not just a very unilateral, physician sort of dominant, assessment. It also includes how a patient feels. The criticism of MDA is that it can be variable. Maybe on a visit your skin is doing great, and that sort of pulls your MDA, and your joints aren't. But I think as an overall holistic picture, I do like the MDA, and it's easy to do because you're asking the, you're examining a joint when you see a patient, right? We are looking for enthesitis when we see our patients. We, as rheumatologists, kind of sometimes it's harder to think of a BSA, but one handprint is 1%, so that's the patient's handprint, so it's super easy to do as well. And then in terms of HACD-I, I mean, for me, a surrogate of HACD-I becomes, how are you doing? Are you able to do activities of daily living that you could not do before I put you on this medication? Right, so that kind of becomes like that easy cheat question. So I definitely use a lot of, I mean, I use MDA in my practice all the time.
Great. Thank you for that explanation. And I'm so happy, Kostas, you brought up the fact that ACR was really developed for rheumatoid arthritis and not really for PSA. So I really like the multi-dimensional aspect of the MDA tool that I'm seeing more often now.
I do like that big what Costa said, that we were, RA was our bread and butter inflammatory arthritis. So whatever we did for that, we sort of just copied and pasted it to PSA. And these are completely different diseases. So we really need to think of PSA not with the same sort of treatment paradigm that we look for RA. And I think that's like an important thing to learn and maybe unlearn as well.
But to add to that, that's why we have mechanisms of action that are specific for psoriatic disease that are not indicated for RA. So again, we've got to break that habit of, copy paste, as you mentioned.
Yes, I have a question for you, Costa. So, from a derm perspective, if we, and this is a question that's asked to me often, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this. So, hypothetically, if we have a patient who comes for psoriasis, and we do the PEST questionnaire, and it's like three, and it's 3 out of 5, and we can't get that patient to see a rheumatologist just because the waiting time to see a rheumatologist is 6 months. And we know that, even a 6 month delay when it comes to PSA can have irreversible joint damage. So as a pure dermatologist, if we were to start them on a systemic agent that also covers PSA, how do you feel about that? And then the patient comes and sees you whenever he or she is able to see you.
I think that's a great, way to bridge the gap of access, selecting an agent that covers all these domains, whether they're currently active or not. Because then when they finally make it into a rheumatologist, we can then further tailor the therapy or perhaps add a DMARD if we need to, if they're still having some breakthrough. So I appreciate that now, as long as they're not coming to us just on topicals, right? So
I mean, I'm so happy that you say the same thing because I tell my derm colleagues that, you know what, it's one of three things that can happen. Either when they come to see me or a rheumatologist, we confirm that they have PSA and, you're on systemic treatment, and if you're not well controlled, we can change it or add something else. And or if they come and they are well controlled and we're like, okay, your PSA is doing well, so you're in probably minimal disease activity, so you can stay on the same medication that your dermatologist gave you, or we diagnose with OA in addition to that. So in either ways, whichever the algorithm flow goes, you're still, treating a patient and he or she's doing well.
And other than maybe a one or two exceptions, the dosing is the same. So whether, they have pure skin or and or joints, you're really not gonna, you have to worry about over or under dosing.
Well, I feel so relieved as the dermatologist here that I'm doing okay. So that makes me wonder, what are your thoughts, being the expert on joints? Is the efficacy of our systemics, in particular our biologics, for prevention of radiographic progression in psoriatic arthritis?
Well, I mean, our goal as a rheumatologist, preserve the joints, improve, maintain their quality of life. We know with many of these systemics, the skin responds much faster. So we have a little bit, longer threshold, especially with the newer, IL-23s. We might wait, 6 months to get full efficacy, where perhaps we're waiting just 3 months, 12 weeks for a TNF or IL-17. But again, this is not a marathon. This is a sprint. I'm sorry, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, right? We're following these patients long term. And life, these are lifelong patients. So we know, as Dr. Kachi mentioned, the disease can cause joint damage in the first few years. So capturing them early and then starting them on a systemic can lead to better outcomes.
Right. I do have I mean, I kind of when I'm thinking of treatment, I do get X-rays for my patients. For the most part, it is unless of course they report axial symptoms. It's X-rays of the hand and the wrist, or feet and ankles, depending on where their symptoms are. Just kind of looking for peripheral arthritis. And the reason for X-ray is I just want to see from baseline is there joint space narrowing or erosions, because then I select a molecule that has data on the inhibition of radiographic inhibition, prevention or inhibition of radiographic progression. If my patients don't have X-ray changes. And I, and they still have PSA just based on like that clinical history and exam. Then I do, I mean, my arsenal or armamentarium of MOA sort of expands a little. So that's how I see that radiographic damage. Yes, no, just to put them in a different bucket. Because like if they have damage to begin with, I know that these patients have probably had PSA for a few years before this diagnosis was made, or they just will be maybe harder to treat or more progressive.
And I think the momentum is now ultrasound and MRI in identifying this damage, because you'll see in many of these studies the sharp scores are very different, placebo and active arm, not much difference. But again, this is looking at 6 months at a lifetime disease. So X-rays, and I do X-rays as well at baseline, depending perhaps every year. But we're trying to use more and more ultrasound when possible.
What's been so fascinating to me treating psoriasis patients is that even the PSA is so diverse in presentation, in severity, frequency of symptoms, and as you mentioned before, Sakshi, like areas of involvement, whether it's an enthesitis or versus maybe like a back pain, versus true joint pain. So it's been interesting. For me, as a dermatologist who does care about treating the patient as a whole and asking about joint pains regularly at every visit, is kind of learning about my psoriatic patient as a whole.
I will say psoriasis is easy to treat. You get to clear skin or not, and it's like very easy. It's visual. PSA is just harder because, as Costa said, we are still looking at endpoints of ACR 20 or maybe ACR 50 now, which still is a 50% improvement in your composite joint score compared to baseline. But that's also not achieved in 100% of patients. On an average, that's only in clinical trials about approximately 40% patients achieve ACR 50, depending on what the MOA is and what time what's the time to the primary endpoint. So we are still not at ACR 100 for 100%. So I do tell my PSA patients that at least the ones that have both PSA and psoriasis that your skin will be all clear, but I can't promise you if I can get you 100% feeling better when it comes to your joints. Again, as long as you're doing better on this therapy than previously, that's kind of like a win for me. I mean, you'll still have flares depending on seasonal variations or if you're stressed or if your personal triggers. But overall, if you're doing well, and clinically I'm not finding signs of disease activity, sometimes if they have raised inflammatory markers, I'll follow that, but that's not across the board for all PSA patients. So PSA is just it's a hard disease to treat.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think we're spoiled in dermatology, even these days with our highly effective biologics like 17s and 23s. If a patient who has plaque psoriasis is not clearing, it makes me wonder. I will go back and just confirm the diagnosis, and that's how effective our therapies are, right? And certainly with PSA, it can be a little more challenging. And so I'm curious, what do you, Kostas, think that? Are there any updates or considerations that you would recommend a dermatologist who is treating most a lot of these psoriasis patients, right? But the majority of the time, patients who have PSA often have psoriasis for 7 to 10 years and then later present with symptoms. What are your what's a top tip you would give a dermatologist?
I tell them to ask for morning symptoms. That's one of the hallmarks, features, right? Are they waking up aching stiff? And, perhaps we all are waking up a little aching stiff, but is it lasting, 45 minutes, an hour? Are they missing work? They might just have one swollen finger, but if they're a musician, that could be disabling for their career. So, I think how it affects their quality of life, especially in how they manifest in the morning, is probably one of the easiest ways to screen these patients.
And Sakshin, I'm curious. Well, my go-to systemic biologic therapies are IL-17s and 23s. We know they're approved for both psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis. Are there any nuances or updates in management using these systemics that you would recommend for PSA?
So I'll give you my opinion, and I'm sure Costas will have a different opinion on this. And this is kind of what I tell my patients, that if you see five different rheumatologists, you probably would give five different opinions on
Six
what
answers.
on what should be that first line treatment for your PSA. I do like 17s and 23s over an anti-TNF just because of that infrequency of injections. And the adverse reactions are lesser with a 17 and a 23 compared to an anti-TNF. And I think the study that really changed my management, because anti-TNFs is, I joke that anti-TNFs are like passing communion wafers, when you go to church, rheumatologists love it. And we cycle through anti-TNFs as well. But again, going back to what we've done for RAs, what we're kind of doing for PSA, I like, the study that was done, which was a head-to-head comparison, Spirit head-to-head with, an IL-17 blocker versus an anti-TNF. Granted that the primary endpoint was a composite primary endpoint of joints and skin, which was, showed that the 17 was superior to an anti-TNF, but they did have a secondary endpoint of, just joint only, where it showed non-inferiority. So that study really changed how I then approached PSA, because I was like, oh, a 17 is non-inferior to an anti-TNF when it comes to joints, but it's superior on the skin with less frequency of injection and less side effects. So then why not? So I don't really use anti-TNFs first line for my PSA patients. I do use a 17 or a 23 now a lot more, with the caveat that if they've had uveitis or inflammatory eye disease, and I'm definitely going for an anti-TNF as first line, or if they have IBD, then you can't use a 17. But yeah, I've changed how I manage PSA.
I'm
Costas, what
actually
about you?
going to agree with you there. I mean,
Okay.
I know I adapted my treatment paradigm partially based on what the dermatologist uptake is. And dermatologists love clean drugs, safe drugs, that don't require perhaps lab monitoring, perhaps aren't administered frequently. The TNFs saved rheumatology essentially, and they have their place. But for PSA, you can, avoid many black box warnings. You can avoid some lab monitoring, and get rapid control with less dosing and more efficacy. So yeah, I'm using them just like you early on.
And Jennifer, me and Costas have not met each other before, and we
This
did
is
not
yeah.
discuss the answer to this question. Wait.
Excellent, excellent. No, I love that. You guys said at first you might not agree, and you ended up agreeing. So that's wonderful. And this is really refreshing for me because I do agree. I work with many different rheumatologists in this area, and I do relate to the fact that there are different ways of doing it, but I'm along the same lines with you, both of you, is that I tend to use I tend to avoid TNFs because there's no need to use them with the 17s and 23s being safer in general and better efficacy, especially for the skin. So
Well, doing the best questionnaire as like the bare minimum. If you're thinking of systemic therapy, cover something, give something that covers PSA as well. And if there's a change, so like, if the patient didn't have joint pain, if you were asking them, and then next visit they're complaining of joint pain, perhaps take that seriously. And if you can't address why he or she's having joint pain, because you don't know how to do a joint exam, which we don't expect dermatologists to know how to do either, then refer them out sooner rather than later. And I think every derm should have a rheumatologist on speed dial in that area and vice versa, because there's just so much of overlap between these two specialties that it's good to know each other.
Commonly, because the patient's skin complaint, let's say they're coming in with plaque psoriasis that's really covered head to toe and been really bothersome, is I will start that treatment. And if they're positive on their pest questionnaire, it's going to be a systemic that is approved for psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis. And then if I'm not seeing that they're improving with their arthritis complaints, not just in the joints, like all the other domains you mentioned, then absolutely, this patient is seeing a rheumatologist. And I'm already texting my rheumatologist colleagues, like, when can you get this patient in? And over the years, we've learned to collaborate and we know each other's style. So we also know, he also knows when he needs my help from a dermatology perspective. What
You know,
else were you thinking?
I actually thought of two things that I think we've not discussed, or maybe three. So the first one was, what do you guys think about, early intervention, or, there'd been some traction in the space of, if we treat patients with systemic, do we prevent PSA? Are there some systemics better than others? Or, that concept of perhaps early intervention for our psoriasis patients with systemics, whether that delays or prevents the onset of PSA. Costas, what do you think about that?
Absolutely. I'm an early adopter. I want to address these patients early on to prevent, long-term damage, which may not show up in x-rays for several years. So I'm all for it. Again, they're coming to us for pain. They're having some active symptom that's bringing them into our clinic. So in the absence of any contraindications, I'm all in.
Jennifer, what do you think? Because, as dermatologists, our psoriasis patients come to us as like first, we are the first point of contact. They go to a rheumatologist only if they have, if they endorse arthritis. What do you think about, hey, if I treat this patient perhaps systemically, aggressively, with who has psoriasis, could I potentially prevent the development of PSA?
I do think so. I think rheumatologists eventually will never see arthritis needlewomes.
I know, right? Yes.
I think you guys have enough business that you won't need the psoriatic arthritis patient. Because I do think that dermatologists over time have improved in identifying what I coin as early psoriatic arthritis, or we are much better at asking our patients about joint pains, looking for enthesitis, and even asking about bad back pain that wakes a patient up in the middle of the night. And so this is from all the great education that we've been doing over time, and now having these great tools that not only have great efficacy in the skin, but have good efficacy in the joints. We're seeing, I bet you're seeing less severe psoriatic arthritis patients. And so my biggest confirmation of perhaps of my clinical suspicion of PSA is when my patient comes back and says, "No, I don't have any more of that morning stiffness," or "I feel so much better." Is my marker like, yes, that patient had psoriatic arthritis.
That's a very good point that you make, because it is a clinical diagnosis. Sometimes I, as a rheumatologist, am like, I'm not sure, but there's something here. How about we consider a systemic treatment? And if you feel that you are moving better, you're less achy, you're less sore, and then you're just like, you have that, that extra step in your step, and retrospectively, then I think, and I'm like, okay, maybe you just had PSA all along and it just wasn't diagnosed because, it was indolent or early or not that obvious. So yeah, I do like that point that you made, that maybe sometimes PSA can be a retrospective diagnosis where you're feeling better with that systemic therapy that I gave you for psoriasis, which also is approved for PSA, and you just are doing well.
Great. I think I've had so much fun learning from both of you and hopefully provided our audience with a nice update in the management of psoriatic arthritis. Was there anything else you guys wanted to add, or were we missing anything?
So, we've talked about biologics. We've, how about those oral small molecules? Whether it's a Costas, what do you think about those for, psoriasis slash psoriatic arthritis?
Well, they're very popular because they are oral. So there's this perception perhaps that it's not as systemic, although it is. And the rapidity of onset is really key. The patients will notice typically for their joints, they'll notice some much sooner than IL-17 or even an IL-23. But they do carry additional risks that we don't see with the other two classes that I mentioned. And there are some situations where you want to avoid it if they have history of cardiac disease and smoking and so forth. But they are very popular in the RA space. And although, as you mentioned, it's not approved for psoriasis, I've had great success for my refractory PSA patients on the JAK inhibitor specifically.
I mean, yeah, I will say that I love JAK inhibitors because, patients sometimes want an oral molecule or, they just don't want to inject themselves because somehow they think that injection is like more invasive. But at the end of the day, both of, whether it's an oral or an injection, it's still entering your body. And I do like the rapidity of response because, I would know soon enough as a rheumatologist, is this drug working for you? I mean, granted, they're not approved for psoriasis, and of course, their robustness of like clearance of skin, they're not reaching a PASI 100, which we have gotten spoiled as dermatologists, and that's what we want. But for that refractory PSA patient, they're an excellent option, in my opinion. Thank you so much for joining us today. Hopefully, this discussion was very informative. It was a great discussion to have. It was great to have Kostas and Jennifer. I learned a lot from both of them, and I really hope that you guys listening to this have learned some ex some tips and tricks. When it comes to handling patients that have psoriasis and or psoriatic arthritis. So once again, thank you so much for joining us. Have a lovely day.